साख्यमर्जुनस्यादौ कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण। सो टुडे वी कंटिन्यू विथ अवर डिस्कशन ऑन द भगवद गीता। वी स्टार्ट विथ 1.8। वी डिस्कस टिल नाउ अबाउट प्राइमरली द इन्फ्लुएंस ऑफ कुरुक्षेत्र एज अ पायस प्लेस। We discussed about the dynasty before the Pandavas, going up to Shantanu. And then we also discussed about the way in which Sanjay got the mystical vision to see the battlefield at Kurukshetra and to report that to to Dhritarashtra. So now let us look from verse 8 onwards. Till now Duryodhana has been describing the power of those on his opposite side. Now he is starting to describe the power of those on his side. So Bhavan Bhishmascha Karnascha Krupascha Samitinjaya Yudhano Viratascha Ashwatthama Vikarnascha Saumadattisthathaivacha. So Bhavan Bhishmascha Karnascha. So Bhavan is a respectful second person address. So Tvam is a normal second person address, like I and you. I is first person, you is second person. So Tvam and Bhavan are second person addresses. And Tvam is used in no more ordinary sense, Bhavan is used in a more respectful sense. So, now because Duryodhana is a Kshatriya and Dronacharya is a Brahmana, so therefore, Duryodhana is referring to Dronacharya with a respectful address, Bhavan. Now also, here the Acharyas describe that Duryodhana is thinking, Bhishma is the commander and on this battlefield, he is also the senior most. So Bhishma, in fact, who recruited Dronacharya as the teacher for the Kauravas. So both in terms of seniority, in terms of hierarchy over here, on the war field, and in terms of course power, Bhishma is greater than Drona. So he's thinking, I already come to Dronacharya and I'm speaking. Now when he's speaking, when the king speaks, everybody else becomes silent. So people are hearing what he's speaking. So even Bhishma is also close by and Bhishma is also hearing. So he's thinking, now when I'm going to talk about the strength of the forces on my side, whose name should I take first? So, normally Bhishma is the commander, his name should be taken first. But then, I am right now standing in front of Dronacharya. So, normally if we go to a person and right in front of that person, we glorify somebody else instead of appreciating that person, it may be treated as a snub of that person. So, he thinks, and then he is actually, whatever be the other hierarchies, Dronacharya is a Brahmana. And Brahmanas are always to be respected more than Kshatriyas. Even if Dronacharya is fighting as a Kshatriya now, he's taking on the role of a Kshatriya here. He's born as a Brahmana and mostly has been living as a Brahmana. So therefore, Bhishma will not mind if I address him first, because he will understand that he's a Brahmana and I am a Kshatriya. So Bhishma will not mind. On the other hand, if I mention Bhishma's name first, I'm standing in front of Drona and Drona may mind it. So therefore, I have already slightly irritated Drona by mentioning Drupada's name also. So I want to agitate him enough so that he'll file wholeheartedly, but I don't want to agitate him so much that he'll become irritated with me and will be disinclined to fight vigorously. Therefore he starts with Bhavan. So he's standing right in front of Acharya and he says, you. And the previous verse said, now I'll enlist the Nayaka Mama Sainyasya, the leaders in my force. So he says, you are a leader. Bhishma is a leader. Bhavan Bhishmascha Karanascha. Now interestingly, Karana is not there anywhere on the battlefield at that time. Karana is not there on the battlefield, but he is very prominently there in the mind of Duryodhana. Because Duryodhana was confident of the full commitment of Karana. He was not sure about the commitment of Bhishma and Drona, but he was sure of the commitment of Karana. And that also after Karana and a half had backed out of the war, saying that as long as Bhishma is fighting, I will not fight. Actually, before the war started, Duryodhana had asked Bhishma to give a comparative assessment of the two forces along with the strength of specific individuals. So at that time, while assessing various forces, Bhishma had ranked Karna very lowly, and Karna had become infuriated by that. He said, "You always denigrate me." And he said, "I can, by my own, a single power, my power alone, I can defeat the whole Pandava army. And I alone can attain victory." So Bhishma looks scornfully at him and said, "No, when have your boasts been translated into actions, O Karna?" He said, "Every time that you have confronted Kaunteya, you have been bested." So actually, many people think Karna was more powerful than Arjuna. And Krishna used deviousness. Deviousness means trickery to defeat Karna. But actually, there had been several confrontations, and each of them, Karna had been bested. Karna had been defeated by Arjuna. So if you look back at the history, the first encounter between the two of them was in the martial exhibition which Dronacharya had arranged on the outskirts of Hastinapur after the education of both the Pandavas and Kauravas had been completed. So there Arjuna excelled everyone else, and Duryodhana's heart burnt in envy. So just as Arjuna was finishing the exhibition of his prowess, suddenly a thunderous footsteps were heard outside. And a powerful bodied person came in. And then that person asked, "I can exhibit all that Arjuna has done. Am I allowed it?" So Kripacharya, Dronacharya looked at each other. They said yes. And then Karna equaled everything that Arjuna had done. And then Duryodhana's heart swelled in pride and joy. He said, "Now, he was, for him, Karna became a tool to get back at Arjuna. He felt that I can get back at Bhima. I can get back at Bhima. Eventually, there's going to be a war, and I can get the better of Bhima. But who will deal with Arjuna?" I said, "Oh, yes, Karna will do that." And then, at that time, Karna said, "Now I would like to have a duel with Arjuna." So, Arjuna stiffened. Arjuna wanted to put this arrogant warrior in his place. And as they got ready, so Kripacharya said, "Okay, but duels can only be among equals. Now, he is the son of illustrious father in the Kuru dynasty. Whose son are you? Who are you?" So Karna's head fell at that time. And then, when Duryodhana saw this, he spoke. Duryodhana was very eloquent. Now, when he wanted, he could quote scripture also for his own purposes. He said, "The scriptures say that actually it is not birth alone which determines the varna of a person, it is qualities. Have you not seen his martial qualities? He is a kshatriya. And is it possible for a cat to give birth to a lion? This person is a lion, and therefore he must have been begotten by a lion. And even if you say that he is not a king, then he says, I will make him a king." And he said, "I give him the Angadesha right now. I make him the ruler of Anga. And bring the sacramental water." And there itself in the martial exhibition, the water was brought. It was sprinkled on Karna and he was made the king. And Karna was overwhelmed by this. So now Duryodhana did show kindness to Karna at that moment. But for what purpose? He was not really a benefactor of Karna. He just wanted to use Karna for his own political purposes. So as Karna was anointed as the king, at that time, from the stands in the assembly, an elderly person came running down towards Karna to embrace him. And seeing that, Karna immediately bent down and bowed to him. And that was Adirath. Adirath was the Suta, was one of the charioteers in the Kuru kingdom. And he says, "Oh, father," he says, his father, Adirath said, "Oh, I'm so happy to see that you have been anointed as a king. May you be blessed, you are so fortunate." And seeing that that he was the son of a Suta, some of the warriors over there said, "Oh, he is the son of a Suta, how can he fight? How can he fight with Arjuna?" So Duryodhana said, "He might have been born as a son of a Suta, but he is now a king, he will fight." So as they were discussing whether they should fight or not, the sun set. And they decided that it would be the end of the day. And after this education, when they were asked for when both of them, Kauravas and Pandavas, went to Dronacharya to say, what Dakshina can you give? So he said, arrest Drupada and make him a prisoner and bring to me. So Duryodhana immediately went with his full army. Both the Pandavas and Kauravas were going. Arjuna said, no, let Duryodhana go first. We'll go afterwards. So then at that time, Dronacharya, at Dronacharya's behest, all the 100 Kaurava brothers along with Karna went. And they were all defeated by Drupada and Drushtadyumna together. They came back shamefaced. And then after that, the Pandavas went. And the 5 Pandavas overcame Drupada and Drushtadyumna. And then Drupada was arrested and brought. So at that time, Drupada felt humiliated to have been defeated like this and brought like a prisoner before Dronacharya. But at the same time, he admired the military prowess of the expertise of Arjuna, and he desired that, let me have a daughter who can become his wife. In this way, I'll be related to this formidable warrior. And that's how eventually when he did a yajna. So at that time, Draupadi was born. He did a yajna actually, primarily to take revenge against Drupada, against Drona. So he got Drushtadyumna and Draupadi both. But anyway, the important point is here, that time, that means Karna along with the Kauravas was defeated by Drupada, and Drupada was defeated by Arjuna. So in this way, Arjuna is superior to Karna. Similarly, the second time that they took indirect face-off or indirect comparison of strength was at the Swayamvar of Draupadi. At that time, the Pandavas were in disguise as Brahmanas, and all the Kshatriyas came and tried to show their prowess. Karna was not allowed because he was not a Kshatriya by birth. And then when Arjuna came as in the garb of a Brahmana and he pierced the fish eye and got Draupadi, all the Kshatriyas were in uproar. They said, Drupada has arranged this assembly to humiliate all of us kings, and he has given his daughter to a Brahmana. He says, we should punish Drupada right now. And they all took out their swords and started charging towards Drupada. Drupada became alarmed. So at that time, Yudhishthira said to Arjuna and Bhima, he said that now he has become our father-in-law. Protecting him is our duty. So immediately, Bhima and Arjuna came in between. And then at that time, Arjuna, using the same arrow which he had used to shoot the arrow in the Swayamvar contest, he took that same bow, and there was a face-off. So at that time also, there was a face-off between Karna and Arjuna, and they fought and fought and fought. Arjuna expertly countered all the weapons of Arjuna, of Karna. And Karna said, who are you? So he said, are you a god? Nobody else can counter my weapons like this. He said, no. He said, I am a faithful servant of my guru. He did not reveal that he is Arjuna at that time. So then Karna put down his bow. He said that he felt that he is a Brahmana, and the military martial power of Kshatriyas is always lesser than the spiritual power of the Brahmanas. So even at that time, Karna could not get the better of Arjuna. And later on again, when they were in Kamyavan, after the Pandavas had been exiled, so there, Duryodhana came along with Karna to try to flaunt his wealth in front of the Pandavas and thereby increase their pain. But then at that time, the Gandharvas were there, who had been sent by Indra. And a Gandharva was told, Duryodhana, you are a trespassing on our territory. Get out of here. He said, this is my kingdom. You get out of here. So there was a confrontation. And the Gandharvas at that time fought fiercely. And although Karna was by the side, Karna fled from there. He was wounded and he fled. And Duryodhana was arrested. And after that, some of the soldiers from Duryodhana's camp, they ran over to the other side of the lake where Yudhishthira was performing sacrifices. So there was a lake. On one side, Karna and Duryodhana had come. And there they are flaunting their wealth, so that the Pandavas who were doing some yajna could see. And their idea was they will burn in envy. But tables had been completely turned. So then the soldiers came and they told Karna, they told Yudhishthira, no, please, Duryodhana has been arrested and all the ladies of our family have also been taken hostage. Please save them. So at that time, at Yudhishthira's behest, Arjuna got ready to go. So Bhima said, oh, it seems at last destiny has become favorable to us. What would have taken some effort for us to do, now the gods have done for us. So, at that time, Yudhishthira said, no, you should not think like this. You know, we may have our differences, but in front of the world, we are 105. We may be 5 and they are 100, but in front of the world, we are 105. And it is the Kuru dynasty that has been insulted. if our ladies have been taken hostage like this. He says, you must go and save them. Bhima was not convinced. Then at that time, Yudhishthira knew how to trigger Bhima. He said, you know, Bhima, what greater joy can you get than to show mercy on your greatest enemy, on one who has hurt you the most? You know, what more can you get by that? Bhima said, yes, now I'll go. So at that time again Arjuna went, and Arjuna defeated all the Gandharvas, and even the leader of the Gandharvas had to surrender, seeing the fierce military power of Arjuna. So again, here the Gandharvas defeated Karna, and Arjuna defeated Gandharvas. So again, Arjuna's power is greater than Karna's. And after that also, again we see that the biggest straight head-on confrontation was at Virat. At that time, at the end of the Ajnatavas, Arjuna was acting as a maid, as a dance teacher behind Allah, and he had come along with the son of Virat to fight against the full Kaurava army. So at that time, all the Kaurava Maharathas were there: Duryodhana, Karna, Shakuni, Dronacharya, Bhishma, Dushasana, Kripacharya. All of them were there, and Arjuna single-handedly defeated all of them. Single-handed. Not only are all of them there, along with them their armies were there. But Arjuna single-handedly defeated. And that time Karna was also there, and Karma was also bested. So the point is that it is not at all true that Karna was stronger than Arjuna. No. Arjuna, whenever there was a confrontation, Arjuna always got the better of Karna. But eventually, when the battle took place, the final battle, so in the Mahabharata war, Bhishma was the commander for 10 days, Dronacharya for 5 days, Karna for 2 days, Shalya for the last day, and Ashwatthama was like a self-appointed commander for the last night, in which he slaughtered, not exactly self-appointed, Duryodhana had only appointed him, but he was self-appointed in the sense that the strategy that he used was completely unethical, and he came up with his own strategy, and killing sleeping enemy soldiers was very, very costly. So, anyway, Karna was the commander for the last 16 and 17 days. Second last and third last days. So, at that time, on the 16th day, he exhibited his prowess, and he actually defeated all the Pandavas except Arjuna, with whom he did not meet on that day. And the next day, there was a fierce head-on battle, and they fought and fought and fought and fought and went on for hours and hours and hours. And at that time, by the will of destiny, Karna's chariot started going into the ground. When Karna's chariot started going into the ground, so Karna told Arjuna, he says, do not entertain thoughts which are cherished by cowards. Wait till I am ready to fight and then we will fight. So at that time, Arjuna immediately put his bow down. So when he put his bow down and waited, so Krishna said, oh Karna, it is surprising that today you remember the codes of morality and ask Arjuna to follow them. You know, where were these codes of morality when you, along with all the Kaurava, when you suggested that Draupadi be brought into the assembly and be disrobed? Where were these codes of morality when you, through Shakuni, participated in the cheating gambling match? Where were these codes of morality when you connived with the Kauravas to burn the Pandavas alive? Where was this code of morality when you, along with five other Maharathas, killed a 16-year-old Abhimanyu? Was it morality by which you did all these activities? And he gave a list of all the atrocities that the Kauravas had performed and which Karna had been a part. He said, if it is morality at all that time, Arjuna will use the same morality and kill you today. Arjuna, shoot. And then Arjuna shot the arrow and Karna was killed. So, actually, what did Krishna want to demonstrate? In a fair fight also, Arjuna could have defeated and killed Karna. But the point that Arjuna wanted to make was, that Krishna wanted to demonstrate was that Shathoshathyam. Shathoshathyam means that with the cunning, one has to be cunning whenever it's required. One cannot let oneself, in the name of morality, in the name of following a small morality, sacrifice a bigger morality. You know, in the history of India, subsequently, this lesson was forgotten. And the forgetfulness of this lesson led to very expensive, very severe consequences. For example, many times when the Muslims would attack India, they would not attack the Hindu kings. They would know the Hindus consider cows to be very holy. So what they would do is, when they would be attacking, they would have a whole herd of cows in front of them. And the Hindu warriors would think, oh, how can we shoot cows? And they would see that there are cows, they don't want to hit the cows, and behind the cows would be the Muslim warriors. And then they would shoot and shoot and shoot, and the Hindus would not shoot back. That was their idea, that we should not hit the cows. And then they would get slaughtered. Or sometimes, when the two armies would be on, one Hindu army, one Muslim army would be on two sides of a river where they are fighting. And what the Muslim would do is kill some cows and put the cow flesh into the river. And the river would become filled with cow blood and cow flesh. And then the Hindus would come, oh, there is cow flesh over here. How can we drink it? And then they would not drink it. And if there is no other water, they will become weak. When they become weak, they will be overpowered by that. So now the point is that Chato Shatyam. In the Vedic culture, at times Kshatriyas are allowed even to eat meat. Normally, meat is not recommended. In fact, in the Mahabharata, very clearly said that there are these four activities: intoxication, gambling, womanizing, and hunting, which inebriate a Kshatriya, which madden a Kshatriya. And what a person does in this aspect of this activity should not be taken seriously. So, Vikarna says this when he is in the Asat Sabha, in the Hastinapur assembly, he was saying that Draupadi, who had been dragged for disrobing, should be spared, and not only should be spared, but Yudhishthira should be returned to his kingdom. Because what a person does under the influence of gambling is not to be taken seriously, because of gambling maddens a person. So anyway, there are many references like this which point this out. So the critical point for us to understand is the Mahabharata teaches morality that is lofty, but at the same time that is practical. So Krishna, what he demonstrates to the Mahabharata is that when the enemy is cunning, when the enemy is devious, one can be devious. Now Krishna himself tried his very best to avoid the war. And how did he try to avoid the war? By going as Shanti too. They tried everything possible. But when that didn't work, Krishna said that, you know, we have to do whatever it takes. So, Chato Shatyam. So, the point which we are making over here is that Krishna did not encourage Arjuna to do immorality. And what was done was just paying immorality back in the same coin. Paying degradation back in the same coin. Chato Shatyam. So, it when it is required, when the enemy is devious, one can use deviousness. That's what the Mahabharata demonstrates over here. Now, coming back to this particular section, what we are discussing, Karana. So, I was talking about how Duryodhana had asked Bhishma to assess the forces on both sides. And because Bhishma had said that Karana's prowess is very less, so Bhishma basically listed, he said, when have you actually turned your boasts into actions? Every time you have confronted Arjuna, you have been defeated. You have come out on the losing side. You have never come out on the winning side. So Karna became very angry. And further he said that, actually now you have even lost your kavach and your kundal. This is a long story. Basically, he was born with an impregnable armor and earrings. It was arranged that Surya came and Indra came as a Brahmin and took a charity from him. And then he gave him the Shakti weapon. So, the point which you're making over here is that as long as he had that impenetrable armor, he was considered to be almost undefeatable. Although, of course, he had become wounded and he had to flee. But that was a formidable defense on his side. So Bhishma said, now that he has lost that, he has become even weaker. So this infuriated Karna, and he said, no, I can bring victory for the whole Kauravas by defeating the entire Pandava army. But normally in a battlefield, in a battle, the glory for the victory goes to the commander. It's like, you know, if there is a cricket match, now one particular player may play very well, and that person may be glorified. But then it is afterwards it remembered. Say India won the World Cup under the captaincy of so and so. By somebody else who might be the man of the match for that particular, say, final or semi-final or whatever, important matches. But people always remember, yeah, under the captaincy of this captain, India won the World Cup. So Karana said that similarly, the glory for winning the war will go to Bhishma. But because Bhishma has denigrated me, I will not give him any glory. And therefore he said, as long as Bhishma is there on the battlefield, as the commander, I will not fight. And he walked off in a huff. Now at that time, Duryodhana was caught in a dilemma. Whom to choose between, Karna and Bhishma. Karna or Bhishma. Now he felt he needed both. He thought, Now his diplomatic mind was working. He said that, actually Karna is committed to me. And Karna will fight with me till the end. So, even if Karna goes temporarily, if Bhishma attains victory for me, well and good. If Bhishma doesn't attain victory, somehow that doesn't happen, then Karna will surely come. But if I choose Karna now, and if Bhishma goes away because of that, and if something happens to Karna, Bhishma will not come back. Because Bhishma is older, and Bhishma is born a Kshatriya, he is my elder, he is my grandfather, he will feel snubbed. So he thought, okay, let Karna go now, let Bhishma be here right now. But then, his mind was always there, oh, Karna is there on my side. And in fact, it is said that, actually, another reason why Bhishma spoke so strongly to Karna was later on Karna, when after Bhishma fell on the 10th day, that night, the next morning, Karna went to meet Bhishma and offer his respects to him. So at that time, Bhishma told him, actually, I know I spoke strongly against you, but my reason was that you are a formidable warrior. And the reason I spoke strongly about you, I assessed you weakly, was because I was trying even at that time to get Duryodhana to stop the war. So Duryodhana had too much confidence in you, and I wanted to decrease that. My intention was to avoid the death of all of you, to avoid this fratricidal war. That's why I spoke like this. So Karna at that time did a reconciliation with Bhishma, and Bhishma again requested, you know, let the hostilities end with my fall. There is no way that you can win. So Karna said, I know I can't win, but Duryodhana has trusted me. How can I give it up? So you see here, in many ways, Karna emerges as a heroic and a tragic figure from the Mahabharata. Karna is virtuous in many ways. He is a very charitable, he is a very powerful warrior. He is also an adherent of Dharma. He is a worshipper of Surya. But then, he is an example of a good person who becomes spoiled by bad association, by attachment to bad association. You know, he becomes attached to Duryodhana because Duryodhana helps him at his time of need. Yes, if somebody has helped us at our time of need, we should help them. But helping others doesn't mean that we have to join in their immorality. Certainly, actually, Karna, he himself realized, he said, you know, I felt, he still tells Bhishma also that, you know, I have regretted the time when I suggested that Draupadi be brought into the assembly and be disrobed. He said, I spoke that because I just wanted to please Duryodhana. This is what happens. Sometimes when we are in bad association, there's certain things which we don't like to do, but we crack some vulgar jokes, we speak certain words, because we want to feel respected, accepted in that association. That's how bad association contaminates us. So Karna, he was contaminated by bad association. And Krishna actually tried his very best. Now, just before Krishna left from Hastinapur, after his mission as Shantidut was rejected by Duryodhana, the next morning Krishna met Karna. And when Krishna met Karna, at that time, Krishna told Karna that, you are the oldest among the Pandavas and you can become the king and all the Pandavas will follow you, just as the Devatas follow Indra. And you can, you know, you don't have to fight on the side of, so you will get glory also, you will get this worldly glory and you will get dharma also, dharmic credits. Otherwise you have to fight on the side of adharma. And you know that you will be killed. You know there's no chance for you to win in this war because you're on the side of adharma. So Karna said, nodded gravely, he said, yes, I know that. I had a dream last night. In that dream, I saw that Yudhishthir was seated on a magnificent chariot dressed in white, and he was rising upward towards the heavens. And I saw Duryodhana, his head was shaven. Now for renunciates to shave their head is considered good. But for Kshatriyas to have their head shaven, it's considered a dishonor. And he said his head was shaven and he was dressed in black. And he was being driven on a car, he was being dragged on a cart drawn by donkeys towards the lower regions. So this indicated that he was going to be destroyed, he was going to die. And he said, yes. The gambling dice that Shakuni threw in the that rigged gambling match, that dice is going to come back to us as the arrows of Govind, of Gandiva, of Arjuna. And those arrows are going to destroy the whole Kaurava army, he says. Duryodhana will be killed by Bhima and I will be killed by Arjuna. I know that. But then he said, but how can I be unfaithful to a friend who has helped me in the time of need? He says, because of his faith in my assistance, Duryodhana has agreed to fight this war. And it is because of him that I have enjoyed sovereignty over Anga. How can I desert him at the time of need? I know I will die, but still I will not desert my friend. Now, at one level, you may say, this is so laudable that one is ready to lay down one's life for one's friend. But the point is, who is that friend? You know, if that friend is a person who is the personification of adharma, laying down one's life for the sake of adharma makes one terribly adharmic. So, Karna did not think that, he thought he was thinking based on dharma, but his dharma was not deep enough. He did not think that how did Duryodhana give the kingdom of Anga to him? How? Actually, the kingdom of Anga did not belong to Duryodhana. It had belonged to the Pandavas. But by sending the Pandavas off to Varna, by various arrangements, he had got temporary possession of the kingdom and he had given it a section of that to Karna. So, what was not actually his, what he had maneuvered, often by diplomatic and immoral ways, to acquire a part of that Duryodhana had given. So even from the this worldly point of view, what Karna had got was not actually belonging to Duryodhana. So secondly, if you were to think more deeply, Krishna is the Supreme Lord and everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. So if the Supreme Lord is telling him to do something, Supreme Lord is the proprietor of everything, then he has to do that. You know, it is ultimately the Lord who gives things to different people, and one of those people may give something to us. So, actually speaking, Karna he had some understanding of dharma, but the understanding was not deep enough. And he said, I will not give up. I will not give up the sight of Karna. So now, here sometimes people say that Krishna tried to somehow seduce Karna so that he would come on his side. Now, that's a very superficial understanding. Actually, Krishna was the well-wisher of everyone, even the well-wisher of Karna. And his point was this, that one who is a virtuous person, who has some virtues, why should such a person be on the side of immorality? And why should such a person persons die? And why should such a person's presence lead to the war becoming bloodier? Because Duryodhana, if he did not have Karna on his side, Duryodhana's obstinacy would have been lesser. So Krishna was not just seducing Karna, Krishna was trying to decrease the unnecessary violence. But Karna was not ready to listen. So at that time Krishna embraced Karna and he said, okay, then we will meet on the battlefield. Vinashakale Viparita Buddhi. So all the calculations got skewed for Karna. So Karna emerges as a heroic but tragic figure. Karna is not there on the battlefield, but Karna is still there in the mind of Duryodhana because he's thinking. Oh, actually, Karna will be there. So he's thinking, among my foremost warriors, Bhavan, Bhishmascha, Karnascha, and then Kripascha Sametim Jayaha. He thinks of Kripa, he's Sametim Jayaha. So now, of course, at one level, he's glorifying the warriors in different ways. Kripa is Samitim Jaya. He is always victorious. So how is he always victorious? Now actually Kripacharya, before the war started, there were two interruptions. One was Arjuna's getting overcome by emotions and that the Bhagavata being spoken. Then Yudhishthira, he actually went over to the enemy side and sought blessings from his elders. So when he sought blessings, he offered obeisances to Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, and Shalya. Shalya was like a father figure for him. So he was the brother of Madri, who was mother, who was like a stepmother for him. So now, when he asked for the blessings, he asked Bhishma, you know, how will you be able to defeat you? So he said, the time has not yet come. When it happens, you come again another time, I'll tell you. Then he asked Drona. Drona said that when I hear some disagreeable news from a trustworthy source, then I will myself lay down my arms. As long as I'm fighting, nobody can defeat me. But when I lay down my arms, you'll be able to overcome me. And then he went and asked Kripacharya. Kripacharya said, I am undefeatable. Knowing this, go and attain victory. Nobody can defeat me in war. Now what does it mean? Actually, Kripacharya, as far as he was a warrior, he was formidable. In a one-off conflict, he would not be defeated. But he did not know any mystic power, mystic weapons. So he was undefeatable means he had been granted a very long lifetime and he could not be killed. Undefeatable not doesn't mean that he could not be defeated, it meant that he could not be killed. He said, I cannot be killed, but knowing this, go and attain victory. Although he could not be killed, because he did not have knowledge of mystic powers, he was not a very great threat. So Kripa Shashamitimja. So Kripa was one of the survivors at the end of the carnage that happened in Kurukshetra. So, and they, Kripa was unfortunately a part of the carnage that happened at night when under Ashwatthama's evil behest, they went and slaughtered everybody in the Pandava camp while everybody was sleeping. So at that time, Kripa, Kritavarman and Karna were there. Sorry, and Ashwatthama were there. So Kritavarman was the only... Kritavarman was the Yadava prince, Yadava commander, who fought against the Kauravas, sorry, against the Pandavas. When Duryodhana and Arjuna both had gone to Dwarka to seek Krishna's assistance, so Arjuna asked for Krishna and Duryodhana asked for the Dwarka army. So the Yadava army came along with its commander, and that commander was Kritavarman. The other, Balramji said, I will not fight because both of you are equal to me, so I will not take sides. And so when they said, when Balram said this, all the other Yadava warriors also followed suit. And they also refused to fight on either side. The only other person who fought, only the other prince who fought was Satyaki. Satyaki was a younger Kaurava, a younger Yadava warrior. And he had been trained by Arjuna. He had been a disciple of Drona, but he had received special further training from Arjuna. And he was a formidable warrior. And he was also eventually one of the survivors on the Pandava side. So the Pandava side also everybody was killed eventually when the night slaughter took place. So Ashwatthama Vikarnascha. Samadatti Sathayivacha. So Vikarnascha. So Vikarna is not again a very formidable warrior. So he's definitely not in the class of Ashwatthama or even Somadatti. So the son of Somadatti was Bhurishrava. And Bhurishrava was a formidable warrior who checked Arjuna very severely on the 13th day when Arjuna was trying to reach Jayadrath and kill him. And finally Bhurishrava was killed, but he was a Maharatha. So Vikarna is not in that class. He is not such a formidable warrior, but still Duryodhana mentions his name. He is one of my formidable warriors. Why? It's surprising that he doesn't mention in this his own brother Dushyasana. You know, for a politician, everything that he speaks is based on calculations. Now he has no doubts about Dushyasana's commitment. So he doesn't mention any of his other brothers also. But Vikarna, when Draupadi was being disrobed, the only Kaurava who opposed him was Vikarna. So that's why he had some doubts whether Vikarna would be fighting committedly or not. And in order to seal, to ensure Vikarna's commitment, he counted, oh, he's one of my important war, Nayaka Mosainyasa. So that's why he's mentioning Vikarna's name also over there. So let's go to the next. Anye cha bahava shura madarthe tyakta jivitaha nana shastra praharna sarve yuddha visharadaha. Anye cha bahava shura. Apart from him, there are many other powerful warriors. Bhava Shura Madarthe Tyakta Jeevitaha. Now, this is a verse which has received a lot of commentary. And the point is, Tyakta Jeevitaha. If you take it literally, it is in the past tense. So, what he intends to say is, they are ready to sacrifice their life for me. But Saraswati Devi speaks through him and he says, they have sacrificed their life for me. So, it becomes like a past tense. That means, Saraswati Devi speaks through him indirectly saying that, actually, they are all going to die. In fact, they already died for me. Now, why do they died for me? That means by taking the side of Adharma, they have sealed their own pact with death. They are themselves chosen the defeating power, chosen the side to be defeated, and they are going to die. But he is not thinking like that. That words are spoken through him by the Aramis Saraswati. So, Madarthe, what he wants to say is, oh, they are all so committed to me that they will be ready to die for me. Bhava Ashura, and there are many like that. Nana Shastra Praharana, and they are all expert in various weapons. And Sarve Yuddha Visharadha, they are also Visharadha, they are all expert in fighting. After describing this, then he says, this is again an important verse which illustrates some scriptural principle. Aparyapta daska asmakam balam bhishma virakshitam paryaptam taidametesham balam bhima virakshitam. So, aparyaptam tadasmakam. So, now the word aparyapta can mean two things. Paryapta means sufficient. So, first I'll tell the meaning of the verse and then we will discuss the specifics. What he is saying is, he's now giving a summary comparison of the two forces and he's telling that actually the force, my forces under Bhishma are aparyapta and the forces under Bhima are paryapta. Now, paryapta means sufficient or measurable or adequate. So now, whenever a prefix comes before a adjective or before a describer, that prefix can emphasize that particular quality or it can completely negate that quality. For example, we have valuable and in front of valuable you put in. Then it becomes invaluable. That means it's so valuable, its value is so great that we can't measure it only. So, in becomes an intensifier of valuable over here. Whereas, if you have the word, say substantial, and then you put the in over there, insubstantial. And that means that actually that has no substance only. So, here in is not an intensifier, in is a negator. So, the prefix means something which comes before a word. So, the prefix can either intensify the sense of the word or it can negate the sense of the word. So, aparyaptam, the a that comes as a prefix over here, before paryaptam, it can intensify the sense of the word or it can negate the sense of the word. So, if we consider aparyaptam as a intensifier, then paryapta can say it's measurable and aparyapta means that our forces are immeasurable. So, this is under Bhishma, our forces are immeasurable and theirs are measurable only. They are under Bhima, they are measurable. So, the idea there is that he is, after doing a comparative assessment, saying that we are stronger. So, this is of course what he would have intended to say. And this is Balde Vidyabhushan's explanation of aparyaptam and paryaptam. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary in the Bhagavad Gita, gives a slightly different meaning. And he takes the a not as an intensifier, but as a negator. So, he takes paryapta to mean adequate. And aparyaptam to mean inadequate. So, paryaptam, aparyaptam. So, what is he saying is, oh, the forces of Bhima, forces of the Pandavas under Bhima are adequate, but ours are inadequate. Now, why would he say something like this? Actually, the point here is, this is again, the words are being spoken through him by Saraswati Devi. So, the double meaning of the words is there, what he intends to say and what he ends up saying. So, now he's comparing Bhima and Bhishma. Now, from the external point of view, Bhishma is far more expert, far more experienced, far more learned than Bhima. So Prabhupada takes this perspective, which Baldev Vidyabhushan also takes, and from that perspective, you know, Bhima is a fig in front of Bhishma. So if our forces are protected by Bhishma, then surely we will be having the upper hand and we will win. However, if we go to look from the internal perspective, you know, what determines the strength of the warrior is the zeal of the warrior to fight. Now a person may be a very strong warrior. If a person's heart is not there, then the person's expertise may not come out. So now as far as the heart being there in the war, you know, Bhishma's heart is not there. He would much rather have preferred the war not take place. And somehow there have been a whole history of circumstances because of which Bhishma is there in the war. But as far as Bhima is concerned, his full heart is there in the war. In fact, he has been breathing fire right from the time when Draupadi was attempted to be disrobed. And the whole Vanvas was a period of intense fury for him. He was waiting for the battle to take place. So Bhima's heart is fully there in the war. And because Bhima's heart is there in the war, so his power in that sense is greater and Bhishma's is lesser. So in this reading, which Vishwanathacharya Thakur gives, the point is that a person's, Duryodhana is actually addressing not just Bhishma, he's telling his other warriors, actually, so if he's said to be addressing Bhishma, he's saying under Bhishma, our power is immeasurable. But if he's addressing the others, then he's saying, actually Bhishma alone is not enough for us. You know, all of you are also important. Bhishma alone is not enough, all of you are important. Then, so under Bhishma alone we are not adequate. When all of you are together, then we will become adequate. And this reading is also contextualized from the, it can also be justified, from, it is also backed by the next verse, which we will see now shortly. But here again we see there is an example of contradiction between the Acharyas. So, Baldev Vidyabhushan is a disciple of Vishwanathacharya Thakur, but he gives a meaning that seems to be different from that of Vishwanathacharya Thakur. Why is that? Actually, there's no essential difference, but the focus may be different. And because the focus is different, that's why the analysis is given differently. So, Baldev Vidyabhushan talks generally in terms of tattva, and Vishwanathacharya Thakur often talks in terms of rasa. So, now from the point of tattva, from the point of our facts, yes, it is true that Bhishma is far more powerful and formidable than Bhima. But from the point of view of analysis, from the point of view of inner feelings, Bhima's hunger for the war is far greater than Bhishma's. So from that perspective, we can understand the two meanings of the words, paryaptam and aparyaptam. So now, after this he is telling, oh, I have glorified Bhishma as my commander, but I should make sure that others don't feel neglected. Therefore, he speaks in the next verse. Ayaneshu cha sarveshu yatha bhagam avasthitah bhishmam eva abhirakshantu bhavantah sarva eva hi ayaneshu cha sarveshu. So now, all of you situated in different places. Yatha bhagam avasthitah, whichever strategic place you are situated in, bhishmam eva abhirakshantu, all of you should protect Bhishma. Bhavantaha sarvaevahi. So now we can visualize Duryodhana is there on his chariot. He's looking at Bhishma. Now he's looking at all the other warriors. He says, Bhavantaha sarvaevahi. So again he's using Bhavantaha, a respectful address. He says, all of you warriors, all of you are also going to have a very important role in this war. And what is that role? You have to make sure that you have your strategic points and you defend those strategic points. And you attack from them. So Bhishma is our commander, but he may get caught up in fighting a particular war at a particular point, and then he may not be able to pay attention to all the other points. All of you also play important roles. So he's trying to get everyone involved. So we see from the political point of view, Duryodhana is expert. So that expertise, even we see his speech is also thoughtful. We may think, oh, Duryodhana is an impressive character. He thinks so much before speaking each word. Yes, that is true. But we have to see, you know, a person's caliber is determined just not by the expertise of the person's speech, but by the purity of the person's motives. And what are his motives? His motives are not pure. His motives are actually filled with greed, filled with anger, filled with envy. He is, Mahabharata repeatedly refers to him as a personification of dharma. Mahabharata says he is actually the incarnation of Kali, who came to start off Kali Yuga actually. So the point is Amsha of Kali in some ways. So now the point which you are making over here is that when a person thinks, you know, if the person has expertise in thinking, expertise in speaking, that is good. But more important is what is the person's heart, what is the person's intention. So if a person has good intentions and then has expert qualities in speaking also, that's the best. But if a person has expertise in speaking but has evil intentions, then Maninam Bhushanam Sarpaha Kimasauna Bhayankaraha. That if a jewel was decorated, if serpent is decorated by jewels, the jewel is attractive but the serpent is still dangerous. And instead of being cautious because of seeing the serpent, we become attracted by seeing the jewel and we go towards instead of away from it. Sometimes when people with demoniac propensities have certain material skills and expertise, we can get enamored by that. And because of that, we may lower our guard down and start appreciating, admiring them and become contaminated by their godless, materialistic, immoral ideas. So we have to be cautious. We have to be cautious in our daily, that we just don't see the qualities, we see the intentions. And from that we actually judge as character, not just through the, not when I talk about qualities, I'm here more referring to not intrinsic qualities like humility, tolerance. I'm talking in terms of abilities, the ability to speak in a way as to captivate others, to commandeer others. All that is alone or not a characteristic of somebody who is spiritually advanced or somebody who is very advanced in God consciousness. So we shouldn't mistake just the glib speech, good speech, as a sign of spiritual advancement. In fact, Kali Yuga, one of the characteristics of Kali Yuga is that expertise in word jugglery will be considered a sign of scholarship. So Shabda Chapalyam, expertise in word jugglery, that is considered to be a sign of scholarship in Kali Yuga. So he is now doing all this balancing act. It's like walking on a tightrope and trying to balance everything. So now seeing this, Bhishma is close by and Bhishma feels pity for him. He says, you know, what is the use of all this? Now the time for war has come, let us fight. Tasya sanjanaya and harsham kuru vriddha pitamaha simhanadam vinadyochai shankham dadmau pratapavan. Tasya sanjanayan harsham. So his harsha, his joy increasing. To who is the tasya? That is Duryodhana. So increasing the joy of Duryodhana, Kuru Vriddha Pitamaha. So Kuru Vriddha is, he is the elderly. Pitamaha. So Pitamaha refers to the grandsire, the grandfather. So we discuss how he is the grandfather. He is in the same generation as the grandfathers. Although he doesn't have any sons. So he's not begotten anyone, but he's in the generation of the grandfathers. So Duryodhana, the Kauravas and Pandavas, their parents were Dhritarashtra and Pandu. And the older generation from them is Bhishma, the one generation above. So Pitamaha, Simhanadam Vinadyochai. So he blew a shankar. Pratapavan, he's valiant, he's Pratap, he has got tremendous courage and power. And when he blew his conch, Simhanadam, the sound that came out was like a roar of a lion. So now, Bhishma is also a fascinating character in the Mahabharata. We see that Bhishma actually, he is in one sense an extraordinary example of sacrifice. Although he was living as a Kshatriya, amidst royal opulence, and in the Kshatriya's palace there are so many material pleasures available, and there are so many beautiful women. The Kshatriya women are themselves beautiful and they have so many maid servants also. So to live there and to maintain celibacy is nearly impossible. That's why generally Vikta Desha Sevitvam Aratir Jana Samsati. For those who want to make spiritual advancement, the Bhagavata also will say in later in 13.11 that one should go to a secluded place, stay away from worldly association. because then the contaminations are lesser. But Bhishma stayed right in the cities, not just in the city, in the capital, but in the palace, the place where there's a maximum material opulence, and where everybody else was enjoying, and there to maintain celibacy is a Herculean task. And his maintaining that is indicative of his enormous willpower. So he had taken a vow when Shantanu, his father, had become attracted to Satyavati, the fisherwoman. So Satyavati's father, he said that, you know, actually for him it was like an honor, great honor that his wife, his daughter would become a princess, become the queen in one sense. From the point of view of that family, it was a prize catch, it was a great honor. But still, he insisted further that my daughter, the son that he'll get from the daughter, my daughter, he should become the next king. So Shantanu was agonized to hear this, because he had already decided that Bhishma would be the king, and he had proclaimed that also. So he came back and he did not, was torn between his attraction for Satyavati, at the same time his commitment to his son. At that time his birth name was Devarata. So Bhishma saw that his father was very morose, and then he wondered what is the reason. Then he inquired, and then he went to the to Satyavati's father, and when he heard the whole story, he said that actually I will, don't worry, I don't want the kingdom. He said, she can have the kingdom, her son can have the kingdom. So now we may wonder at this point, you know, what is this? You know, the father should be arranging for the marriage of the son, not the son the marriage of the father. The point is that when the Lord's pastimes are going to happen, at that time the characters over there are moved in many different ways. And when they're moved in different ways, you have to understand that this is not just ordinary material. There is a higher plan also involved over there. And in general also, for the Kshatriyas, to marry many wives was not considered wrong. Polygamy was accepted in Vedic culture for several reasons. One of the primary reasons was that in Vedic culture, every woman is, it was considered necessary for her to be married. You know, women can also be brahmacharini in spirit. A brahmachari is not just external varna. Brahmachari ultimately, essentially, it means brahmacharati iti brahmachari. That one who lives in Brahman. So even women can live spiritually, and they can be brahmacharinis in spirit. But in terms of ashram, women are always in the Vedic culture to be married. So now, because in the Vedic culture, the a good number, not very large, but still a small but significant number of men would take to the renounced order. They would become brahmacharis or sannyasis. So therefore, there would always be, the number of women would be more than the number of men. Another reason was also that in the Vedic culture it is understood that, you know, to get a son requires, relatively speaking, more punya. So sometimes when the population would not be so punyavan, then the number of women would also be more than the number of men. So that's how they would get the progeny. So now, because all the women had to be married, so sometimes, in some cases, polygamy was allowed. So in some cases it was allowed means that not everybody had many wives, but those who could maintain them. So it was very important that all the wives should be treated very properly. You know, they should be taken care of adequately, and they should be cared for. That was in the king, especially the kings and the kshatriyas, they were able to do that. And that's how they were allowed to have many wives. So, of course, Srila Prabhupada, when he was asked about this, he said that, you know, according to today's law, there is polygamy is considered illegal, and therefore, we should not have this at all. Although it's a Vedic practice, it was accepted in Vedic culture. In today's culture, it is not practical. And in Kali Yuga, even to maintain one household is often, as the Bhagavatam says, and that it's actually more difficult than to maintain a kingdom also. Especially as Kali Yuga becomes more and more complex and more degraded, things become more and more difficult. So our goal is not to complicate our material life more and more. But the point is, polygamy was allowed. So here, when something is happening in the Lord's pastimes, now this is, we can say this is not the Lord's pastimes directly, but this is all the precursor to the Lord's pastimes. So that is not entirely transcendental, but we don't see it as entirely mundane also. So Bhishma then said that, you know, her son can be the king. I don't need the kingdom. Then his father, he was also expert. You know, if you want something, the intelligence becomes expert to think about it. All kind of future possibilities, he said. You know, you may not want the kingdom, but what about your sons? They'll want the kingdom. He says, no. Then at that time, he took a vow. He says, I will not have any sons. I will stay unmarried. He says, Bhishma. And at that time, this was such a fierce vow for Kshatriya to do, that even the devatas, they said, Bhishma. It's a very fierce vow. And took that vow. And that's how his name became Bhishma thereafter. So at that time, he also took a vow that I will protect the rule. Not only will I not... Now, I or my distill, not only will I not usurp the kingdom, not only will I not have children who will want to usurp the king, he says, I will, as long as I live, I will protect the ruling king of the Kuru dynasty, of Hastinapur. So, when he took that vow, he could not have conceived that in the future, the ruler of Hastinapur would be as spineless, as weak-hearted a person as Dhritarashtra, and that he would have gotten such an evil-minded son as Duryodhana, and he would have to fight on the side of Duryodhana. So Bhishma, having to fight on the side of Duryodhana, was unfortunate. You know, he had taken a vow long ago, and he had to stick to that vow. And moreover, he also says himself in the Mahabharata that, actually, I am conquered by money. So he says, I lived on the money of the Kauravas, and therefore I had to fight on the side of the Kauravas. And these are all external reasons. Ultimately, we understand that the Lord wanted Bhishma to fight on the side of the Kauravas. Why? Because through Bhishma, the Lord wanted to demonstrate an extraordinary lesson. The lesson that no matter how powerful a person may be, if that person opposes the plan of the Lord, that person cannot succeed, that person will be destroyed. So Bhishma had tremendous power. You know, he had actually defeated all the world Kshatriyas in a Swayamvar, which in which he got the brides not for himself, he got the brides for his brother, Vichitravirya and Chitrangada. He got Amba, Ambika, Ambalika. And then he battled with, for 27 days, with that person who had defeated all the Kshatriyas of the world 21 times, that was Parashuram. And at the end, practically, he defeated Parashuram. Parashuram was a spiritual master in many ways. He had learned from Parashuram, but he, not a spiritual master, you could say, guru, was a martial teacher. But he not only equaled him, but he excelled him. And finally, Parashuram was overcome and Parashuram was about to be defeated. So at that time, the sages came and told, do not kill him, he's a Brahmana. So Bhishma desisted from killing him. So he was so formidable. But the Lord wanted to demonstrate that if anybody goes against the plan of the Lord, that person will have to, will not succeed. So Bhishma took up that thankless task, you know, the task which could lead him to be misunderstood for all time to come. He took up that task and he fought on the side of the Pandavas, against the Pandavas, on the side of the Kauravas, so that he could be used as an instrument for demonstrating a very important teaching by the Lord. So now Bhishma is thinking that, now I have to fight, let me start fighting. So enough of this politicking. We have had enough talking, now nothing is going to happen, let us fight. And when he blew the conch shell, he knew, Bhishma knew that ultimately Kauravas are not going to win, Duryodhana is going to die. But he said, let's get on with it. I want to see how Krishna protects his devotees. And that's why I said, let's start blowing. And then, but when Duryodhana heard this, he blowing the conch shell, he felt, oh, Bhishma is eager to fight. So my speech has been successful. Yes, I offered respect to Bhishma, and Bhishma has become enthused to fight. So actually, Bhishma had become impatient. What is this politicking going on? But Duryodhana thought, oh, my speech is enthused. Tasya sanjanayan harsham. So his harsha became more. His harsha increased. And then this was, Bhishma was the commander. So that was the signal. When the commander signals the blowing of the conch shell, the blowing of the conch shell indicates beginning. Just like at the start of the Aarti also, we have blowing of conch shell. Similarly, there's a blowing of conch shell over here. So you know what happened? So there's a blowing of conch shell. Let's look at the next. So immediately everybody else started blowing. Tatha shankahascha bhairyascha panavanaka gomukha sahasaiva bhyanyanta shabdastumulo bhavat. So then all the different warriors started blowing their conches, and not only they started blowing the conches, there were, you know, it was actually the war was not just a war. No, it was often fought in a sporting spirit. You know, you have your skills, I have my skills, and let us fight. So when they're fighting with this kind of skills, at that time the whole mood was, they knew that we are indestructible. You know, we may die here, but if we die heroically while fighting, then we will attain auspicious destination in the future. So the Kshatriyas, when they fought in a battle, it was, although there was bloodshed and there could be death also, but the spirit was of fighting. In a heroic sporting way, and that's why they all became jubilant. They said, "Let's fight." The shankhas chabheriya. So the warriors blew the shankhas, but along with that, there were different people, there was other backup staff also, you could say. They were blowing that, they were beating kettle drums, and they were blowing drums, and they were all different instruments. The shankhas chabheriya. So bheriya is a large drum. Panavanaka gomukha. So Panavanaka is small drums, kettle drums, mukhaha, horns. And it's sahasa abhyanta. So just now the talking was going on, Bhishma blew the conch and immediately everybody was waiting. Everybody started blowing. So suddenly, and what happened? It's a shabdas, tumulo abhavat. So tumulo is tumult. Sound was tumultus. And then a tumultus sound spread everywhere. Another sound spread everywhere. So then, now the scene shifts to the other side. And other side, we'll see what happens. So, Tataha Shvetair Hayair Yuktair Mahati Syandane Sthitau Madhava Pandavas Chaiva Divyav Shankhav Pradamat. This is Krishna's entering the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna has not yet been either mentioned or spoken about. And that is indicative of the mentality of Duryodhana. Duryodhana's calculating mentality is there. He thinks about everyone. He assesses both sides, but he thinks, oh, Bhishma, Karana, Krishna is not fighting. Then what does he need to think about Krishna? That is the calculation of a godless materialist. The godless materialists always think in terms of material things. They do not think in terms of the plan that the Lord has. And the role that the Lord is going to play. So although Duryodhana is not being referred to, Krishna is there on the battlefield and he is going to play a very decisive role. And when the entry comes sometimes in a movie, when a hero enters, so sometimes the hero may, there may be some damsel in distress, the heroine is, somebody is coming and abducting the or abusing the hero, and then the hero comes. Maybe the hero comes in a fast car and zoom, the car comes. So when the car's wheels are shown, the screeching sound of the brakes is shown, and the door opens and the hero's, not lotus feet, there are modern shoes that are shown. And then you move upward and you come to the face of the hero. So that's how the hero makes a dramatic entry. So like that, Krishna is making an entry. So how first you describe? So when you move the camera to the side of the Pandava. So, Tataha Shvetair Hayair Yukte. The first thing that is seen is, oh, there are beautiful white horses. Spotless white horses. And then, behind the horses is the Mahati Syandane Sthitav. It's a magnificent chariot. Mahati Syandane, huge chariot. It's a chariot which was given by Agni. When Arjuna pleased Agni. So, at that time, he gives him Mahati Syandane Sthitav. And on that, who are there? Madhava Pandava Shaiva. So there is Lord Madhava. Now, normally speaking, nobody would mention the name of the charioteer before the name of the king. In fact, if you see, when Duryodhana is mentioning the various warriors, he doesn't mention the name of the charioteer at all, because charioteer is of no consequence. But here, the charioteer is going to be of supreme consequence. And that's why, even before the name of the chariot warrior, the name of the charioteer is mentioned. Madhava, at Lord Madhava. He is the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. Wherever he is, there is going to be supreme fortune over there. Pandava Shaiva. And there is Pandava. Who is this Pandava? This is Arjuna. And then what do they do? Divyav Shankhav Pradatmatuhu. Divyav Shankhav. Their conches are transcendental. And why are they transcendental? Of course, Krishna's conscience is transcendental. because Krishna is the Supreme Lord, his paraphernalia is transcendental. Because Arjuna is a pure devotee, even his Arjuna's intention is transcendental, and even his conscience is considered transcendental because of that. And in this way, Krishna makes a very dramatic entry in the Bhagavad Gita. Mahati syandane sthitaus chira magnificent chariot. And what happens thereafter, we'll discuss in the next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.